Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Fred, the creation magazine that you and I have been going through has a fabulous editorial. In fact, you told me, remember you called me, said, Bob, read the editorial. It's excellent. It's by our friend Jonathan Sarfati.
Yeah, it's a great editorial. Looking forward to reading it, but I want to go through wasps first.
Okay, because the editorial mentions an article in here on wasps, and atheists use wasps against us creationists.
They sure do.
Yeah, they breed them and they release them in our churches.
No.
They use them as
on my back porch for sure.
Yeah, they use them as an argument against us, right?
Because they do.
Why would a loving God create wasps? Yeah. You know, not to mention mosquitoes, which I just mentioned.
Yeah, something Darwin himself had said, and they use that all the time. Why would he unleash that?
Yes.
A loving God, why would there be wasps?
Yeah, and that's a great question. There's an article in here, Wasps, Nature's Pest Control, by Lita Kosner. And so if we go through this first, then when we get to the comment in the editorial, we're ready.
Yep.
Okay. So what about wasps?
Well, they play a useful role in our ecosystem. Did you know that? They actually play a useful role.
They're important. They belong to an insect order called Hymenoptera. That's Greek. I studied Greek for a few years in college.
Yep.
Hymenoptera, which includes ants and bees. And Fred, they count how many species of wasp there are?
30,000.
30,000?
That's a lot of species to get on the ark.
Yeah, right. That's a conservative number because there are many who say it's 100,000 species.
Yep.
You know, there are these lumpers and splitters. You remember those guys?
Yeah.
I think the splitters might be a bit out of control with all these thousands, tens of thousands of species of wasps. But some of them are really remarkably different, especially their lifestyle and all. So it's fun to think about the different kinds of wasps. And then we'll talk about, you know, the atheist argument.
Yeah. So there's like the paper wasp. And so it builds its nest using chewed up wood pulp. And then you see those individual cells. So in there they have larvae plus paralyzed insects that the larvae feed on.
Yeah.
Now, so there's these individual cells. Now, those are kind of creepy looking when you see them. And the reason I say that is, you know, my son, when he was like, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8, he threw a ball under our deck and I told him, well, just go get it. He went to get it. He crawled under there. Then he came out screaming and I'm like, oh, what's wrong? And he had been stung by several wasps.
Oh, no.
So we looked under there and there is a huge, you know, catacomb looking.
And it is. When you watch these documentaries, nature documentaries, and they have this great photography where they go right in and there you are in the hive. In the nest.
Yeah.
And it's creepy, right?
Super creepy.
But that's because we're not bugs.
Yeah. creepy to them.
No. If you were a bug, you'd be perfectly comfortable. But it's just so unfamiliar to us. And so, yeah, these are like sort of like a honeycomb pattern to them. And each one has this larvae, this baby wasp. And so they put these insects in. But they don't kill the insects typically. That's amazing.
Yeah, they paralyze the insects and the larvae slowly feed on them.
And the way they feed on them is amazing too. Maybe we should get to that in a little bit.
Yeah.
But the 30,000 wasp species, they don't all live in these social colonies. About 1,000 species do. 29,000 species, they're more solitary.
Yeah.
They hang out.
Yep.
And so they will find a hole or they'll dig their own. But there is one of the largest species. This guy's a scary one.
It is. I'm glad I've never seen one. It's the Asian giant hornet. This guy is 2 inches long. So I'm doing my hand
two
right
inches.
Now.
That and that's not talking about the wings.
Wasp.
That's the body.
Yeah.
2 inches long.
2 inch long body.
Could you imagine that coming at you with stinger?
Oh.
When I was a kid in New Jersey, Hawthorne, New Jersey, we lived on Mohawk Avenue. And we used to have battles with wasps that lived in cracks in the stone wall on our property. And we would go out there with hoses and the nozzle, and we'd spray, and then we'd run like crazy. And we'd get stung. I mean,
wow.
We were crazy.
You know? Yeah.
Crazy kids.
I can't believe you did that. I was stung for the first time ever in my life like 3 years ago.
Oh.
And I couldn't believe it's one of those things where, like, if you prick your finger on something, it hurts for, like, 2 seconds,
yeah.
And then it goes away. this thing hurt and hurt and it continues to hurt.
A wasp?
It hurt so bad
yeah.
that I got in my car and I went to Home Depot and I got wasp control to kill. I went on a battle. I went right. all out rage.
And then you do your neighbor's yard.
Oh, man. I was like, that's I've had it with these, yeah, these guys.
Right. In fact, the welt, the pain could last for up to a week.
Yeah.
And it gets real itchy and real difficult. Fred, I remember hearing as a kid, and we tried this. We did it. I've done this. That a bee, a wasp, sometimes, you know, especially kids, what do we know? It won't sting you if it's in darkness. So we would cup our hands over a flower that had a bee on it, maybe a honeybee, a yellow jacket, I don't know what. And sure enough, you could feel it crawling around on you. I remember it not stinging us. We would throw them away real fast, like open your hands and throw them away. But one time I remember I did that and it was right between my fingers.
Ooh.
And it stung me.
Oh.
So I never did that again.
Wow, Bob, I didn't know you were so crazy.
Crazy kid.
Man, I would never do that.
Way worse.
I hated,
Fred.
Oh, man, I hated wasps.
We did way worse than all that. But these wasps are also great at pest control.
Yep. Now, when I saw pest control on this article, I immediately thought of my incident where I had to go buy pest control. You know, so, but it's a different kind of pest control. It's the wasps themselves doing pest control.
Yes, because, for example, yellow jackets will feed the larvae of these liquefied insects and spiders to their offspring.
Yeah, so they go kill, or they in some cases paralyze, but in other cases kill insects and spiders.
Yeah.
And I hate spiders. And so this is really good. I didn't know this. So they actually kill these guys and bring them as food for their larvae.
So one wasp colony, about how many insects might it eat or, you know, destroy in a season?
Yeah, so it would be about 2 pounds of insects, and that amounts to 100,000 insects.
100.
Who would have known
Imagine
that?
Buying insects by the pound.
It makes me kind of not want to kill those colonies.
I'll have a half pound of spiders and a half pound of ants, please. So for them to take out 100,000 insects, and then the larvae, they secrete this sweet substance that the adults feed on.
Yep.
So it's all very symbiotic.
Yep.
And once the wasp matures, then the adults can no longer feed on the secretion of the larvae. So they go off and look for nectar from flowers or other kinds of sugary liquids like fruit juice.
Mm-hmm.
And they come after your picnic.
Yeah. Well, you know, people use these wasps. They'll actually release them into their gardens and fields because of this pest control ability that they have. I never realized that.
Yeah, so they're actually valuable. They have an economic value, and they're bred and then intentionally released. That's pretty cool. In fact, National Geographic talked about this.
Yeah, that creation magazine, right? National Geographic.
Yeah, they're not creationists. Yeah. They're atheists.
Yep, they are.
Hardcore.
Yep.
They hate creationists.
Oh, absolutely.
And they hate the Bible.
Yeah.
And we've done shows on that. But here's what they wrote. Despite the fear they sometimes evoke, wasps are extremely beneficial to humans. Nearly every pest insect on Earth is preyed upon by a wasp species, either for food or as a host for its parasitic larvae.
So extremely beneficial to humans.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
So thank you, Lord, for that. Now, the stinging part, though. We got to get to the stinging part.
Yep.
They don't all sting, right, wasps?
Yeah, only the females do.
Figures.
Why is it females always so bad in nature? Yeah, you know, the lion, female lion's the worst one, and
the
black widow, you know, kills the male spider.
Yeah.
Man, they're vicious.
Yeah, and the male wasp does not have a stinger, but he will bluff if he's threatened.
He pretends to sting.
Yeah, and isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Like evolution, these things are so funny when Darwinists try to come up with an evolutionary explanation for everything. They sound like Marxists trying to come up with a Marxist explanation for everything, and they sound just so absurd.
Yeah.
But at any rate, Darwin focused on this way back in 1860, and he made an argument, and it's one of his more infamous quotes. And he wrote this: "I cannot persuade myself that a beneficent and omnipotent God would have," and then he goes on. But Fred, all atheists and scientists who are biologists who hate God, they all make this argument. And what they should realize, which they deny, is that this is not a scientific argument. This is a philosophical argument. It's a theological argument.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. And so they can't acknowledge that, I think, because of their cowardice, because they're not confident in their position.
Mm-hmm.
When you're confident in your position, you could just admit the obvious truth. This is a theological argument.
Yep.
And as such, theologians have weighed in, and we'll get to a little bit of this, and it's the problem of pain and all, basically.
Yeah.
But Darwin wrote, "I cannot persuade myself that a beneficent and omnipotent God would have designed the ichneumonidae," all right, that's just that
wasp.
A wasp, parasite wasp, "with the express intention of their feeding within the living bodies of caterpillars." Or he says that the cat should play with the mice.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the argument. And that's, you know, it's a very widespread argument. Atheists will use this
against. Yeah, they use that all the time.
Yeah, against creationists. And we'll go on with the article. But Fred, one thing I've wondered about, say, mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that, you know, the original purpose for mosquitoes, it could have been like free flu shots?
Free flu shots.
Yeah. That idea, because we live in a fallen world, it's hard to comprehend the original design. But could it be that we have vaccines and antibiotics? Could it be that in God's infinite brilliance, that he recognized that there will be a need for this type of behavior? And you go to the doctor, you get a flu shot, and it hurts. You don't like it. But you realize, well, we're doing this because it's beneficial.
Yeah. So how is it beneficial to be bitten by a mosquito?
Well, I don't know. I'm just positing that this might be a possibility.
Yeah.
Like providing a vaccine.
Yeah.
For something else that's lurking. You get a little bit of it instead of too much of it. You know, our immune system is far more than just an immune system. It's an MIS. It's a microbe interface system. You just get off an airplane and you start breathing in the air of another city and you eat lunch and your microbial interface system is going wild.
Mm-hmm.
There are millions of organisms that all need to interact in an ecosystem. And so I don't know, but I think we're going to be astounded when we get increasing insights into the original functionality.
Yeah. It'll be really cool when we meet God and we can ask him about this stuff.
Yeah.
Super cool.
Yeah. And I think he'll be interested to talk about it because he's the creator.
Yep.
So it turns out that there are these instincts in bugs that are complex.
Yeah. So we mentioned the caterpillar earlier, you know, that Darwin complained about, you know, wasps and caterpillars. It's actually these wasps will eat the caterpillar from the inside out. So he knows a certain way to eat the caterpillar.
Wait, from the inside?
Yeah.
Out? Come on. Yeah. That is a horror movie. That's a sci-fi horror movie. So this thing is eating its prey that's paralyzed from the inside out, but wouldn't it just kill it right away?
Well, you'd think so, but it avoids the vital organs. It kind of knows where to go. It knows how to keep this guy alive for as long as he needs
it. That's unbelievable. Now, isn't that cruel?
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. These are insects.
These are insects. Do they have nephesh?
Nephesh soul?
Yeah.
No, insects, they are alive biologically. We've referred to them on the air as biological robots.
Yeah.
They have biological life, but they don't have a soul. Like animals that can have, and insects are a kind of animal also, but higher order animals that can have a relationship, they have different qualities or depths of souls that the Bible says that God put into
animals. Yeah, body and soul,
right.
But not spirit. That would be the difference with
not
the human.
Spirit. Humans have spirit. Yeah. Animals, like, say, a horse, a relationship with a horse, or even a dolphin, or a cat, those relationships are possible with humans because they have a soul in them. But there are microbes, single-celled, you know, organisms, fungus, plants that you cannot have a relationship with.
We can't.
And undoubtedly, thankfully,
yeah.
and undoubtedly, they do not have a soul.
Yep.
So they are like biological robots.
And we have evidence, really good evidence, that they don't feel pain, right? They can eat themselves to death. You can trick them to eat themselves and they're not, they'll do it.
So weird.
Yeah. It is kind of creepy.
Yes. Right. So at any rate, somebody might look at a caterpillar being eaten from the inside out and transfer that and think, well, if that was happening to me, I would not like that. But the caterpillar is like a robot. And here it's part of this astounding and complex ecosystem.
So this does bring up an interesting theological argument. I mean, from the article, it says the main argument for structures that seem to be designed to cause pain and suffering still applies. That is, that God foreknew the fall and may have front-loaded certain animals with the weapons they would need to survive in the post-fall world.
Yeah. So what is interesting about this to me, Fred, is that many Christians don't like to use the word contingency.
Contingency.
But that's a very good word.
Yeah.
And as you study the Bible, you see that there are contingencies. And so some theologies like to do away with the notion of contingency, and they will say everything is decreed.
Yeah.
So every good and wonderful thing. Everything's
mapped out from the beginning.
Right. Everything flows from the mind of God. So that's real comforting if you're thinking about wonderful things like sunrises and flowers blossoming. But then when you think of perverted things and wicked things and vile things.
Christians getting their heads cut off.
Yeah, and the kinds of things where God said, it never entered my mind that they would sacrifice their children, burn their child
even entered my
to
mind.
The altar, on an altar to Molech.
Yep.
With someone who's supposedly a believer, or maybe a believer, and then they destroy their marriage and unfaithfulness and all those things. So you think of all those things, God decreeing from eternity past, a lot of Christians look at that and say, that doesn't sound
good. That doesn't make sense.
So then there are other theologies, different versions of all these, where they focus on freedom, on man's freedom, but then also some on God's freedom. Because many theologians suggest that, well, not only could we not change the future, but God can't change the future either. And to me, that's a bit peculiar.
Yeah.
And they'll talk about all the things God can't do, like the Bible refers to God's faithfulness, that we could trust him. And they will suggest that, well, we can trust God because he can't change. Immutability.
Yeah. Yep.
And so, you know, you and I have been in these conversations probably a dozen lunches at different restaurants with Christians. And we like to point out, well, God's faithfulness is not a negative aspect. It's a positive. It's not something he can't do. It's something he does.
Yeah.
His commitment to righteousness, his commitment to the good of others.
Yeah.
And so, but then they say, well, how can we trust God if he can change? And it's like, well, he offered his son on the cross for us. That shows us his commitment to love others. So we can trust him because of his fierce commitment to righteousness. But a lot of Christians say, no, that's not good enough. God is faithful because he cannot do otherwise.
Yeah.
But our church, Denver Bible Church, we teach God is faithful because of his commitment to righteousness and his love, which he has demonstrated.
Yes. Now, the listener could go to the website and a link to the Brown Palace debate you had with James White, which was incredible. I was there.
Dr. James
in the
White.
Audience.
You were downtown Denver
that
night. Oh,
yeah, that was really neat.
You know, we have
really
that debate. You're right. In fact, rsr.org/time, that has a link to the debate. Also, if they remember the theologian's name, rsr.org/James White, that'll get you right to the debate. You could watch the whole two-hour moderated debate. I mean, the Brown Palace is iconic, downtown Denver, built in the 1800s. And it was an awesome night. We have about 20,000 views of that debate on our YouTube channel. And then we have even another 10,000 because we offer it in audio only and excerpts of the debate. So it's really getting around.
Well, it is. And you know, there's really fascinating stuff after the debate, you know, interesting and shocking comments from yeah. James White.
Yeah, the debate aftermath. Yeah, really.
So that's worth looking
very
at.
Very much so.
Pretty much an admittance that your argument's right.
Well, that's but, nice you know, of you, but. Yeah. So, Fred.
Go watch that link.
I'll give you 20 minutes to cut that out. But this point that when God created, there were contingencies. When Adam and Eve sinned, the contingency was how that would affect their bodies. How would it affect the ecosystem? And so creatures that would have been vegetarian became carnivorous. And it's just so interesting. There's so much evidence along those lines that we've talked about over the years.
So God had a plan B.
Yeah.
You know, Elway didn't have a plan B with Manning, if you remember that. God had a plan B with, you know, the
Elway
fall.
Elway and Manning.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. A little football analogy yep. there. Well, you have season tickets to the Broncos. How many years have you had those?
Oh, since the new stadium. So however long that is, I don't know, 10 years?
10 years.
Something
pretty,
like that.
Pretty cool, Fred.
Yeah.
When I grow up, I want to be Fred Williams. So at any rate, God's plan for the creation was awesome beyond measure. And I think we'll find out that there were plans beyond plans beyond plans that will boggle our mind yep. and show Absolutely. The brilliance of God. So wasps will be part of that. Many species are dependent on each other. We know that.
Yeah. Symbiotic relationships.
And when you find out the kinds that wasps are involved in, it blows your mind. Like, for example, a fig tree, and there are fig wasps. And the fig is not really a fruit in the normal way that fruit is a fruit. These figs are actually a cluster of many flowers and seeds that are inside, stuck inside a stem.
Yeah.
That's wild.
That is wild.
That's an interesting little factoid about figs. Because of that, how do you pollinate the fig? It's a very complicated system. And these wasps, it's like they give their lives to pollinate these fig trees. There are different kinds of fig trees, and some species have their own fig wasps.
Yeah, that's right. It's so specialized that, you know, each fig tree has its own special type of wasp in that symbiotic relationship with.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And, you know, the wasp gets inside the fig, and to do that, it needs to basically tear off the female again. She tears off her antennae and her wings because it's so hard to get inside the fig.
Yeah.
Now that's commitment.
That is commitment, but they don't feel any pain. It's not a big deal to them.
Well, that's true. If you got to tear off your wings, you tear off your wings. And so then inside the fig, and these are not the kinds of figs we eat typically.
Yeah.
The ones you buy at the store, you don't have little wasp parts in them.
This isn't a fig Newton.
No, that's right. No wonder they're so crunchy.
Yeah.
So she lays her eggs, they hatch, they mate inside there, and then the males bore holes through the fig, and then they die.
Yeah, they do their job, and they die.
Yeah, and then the females go out those little holes, and the whole cycle begins again.
Yep.
And she,
amazing.
So she brings into the new fig tree the pollen from the one she was hatched in. So that's all really cool. Without pollinators, the figs would die. It's all symbiotic. It's all astounding the way God made all this.
Yeah.
And that's just one example of so many of how wasps are beneficial.
Well, another one is, and this is pretty cool, that researchers are discovering that there's a toxin in the wasp venom that kills cancer cells.
Whoa.
And we've heard of this with snake venom too, right?
Oh, yeah. Our friend, Dr. Jerry Berkman, has written on this, listing all these kinds of natural poisons that are used as medicines. That is astounding. And so as they study this stuff, the molecular biologists, they found that there's a molecule, they call it MP1, and it targets the surface of cancer cells. And it destroys the cancer cells, but not
the surrounding
cells. The healthy cells.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. They're doing this in laboratory tests, but not on humans yet. But it seems promising what they're learning. For example, this has been reported in the last year in Discover Magazine.
Last year. You know, they have another surprising role, and it has to do with yeast. Oh, what's that all about?
This one is so fun. This is wild yeast, and of course, yeast is so important, and it's great economic value and how we use it in our diets and baking and all. Well, wild yeast lives, certain species, lives in grapes and berries, but it only lives in ripe fruit. That's it. It can't live until the fruit is ripe. So scientists couldn't figure out how the yeast survives when the fruit is not in season. And during the winter, what's with the yeast? Where is it? So researchers at the University of Florence, and Fred, Cheryl and I have been there, Firenze, and what a beautiful city.
Yeah, we're talking about Italy here.
Yeah, just gorgeous. And so researchers at the University of Florence, they thought that wasps would be a good candidate for where the yeast survives. So as they studied them, they see that the wasps have this instinct. They're driven to eat the berries and the grapes during the summer. Then the yeast survives in their gut throughout the season as they hibernate, and it's transmitted to the next generation when they feed their young. And so that's eventually how it gets into the ripe berries and grapes. God is so awesome. Fred, insects are not nephesh. They're not living
they don't have the soul.
Creatures. Yep. And so there's no suffering involved with the death of insects, of bacteria, of mold.
Like you said, they're just biological machines.
Yes, right.
All 100% instinctual, following a program.
Exactly. And we know a lot about programs and robotics.
Yeah.
And nanotechnology. And God was the first engineer. So the insect population undoubtedly needed to reach homeostasis even before the fall, where in our body there are so many systems of checks and balances. You produce adrenaline, but not too much. It has to be turned off. And so insects perform these incredible functions all over the world to keep the ecosystem functioning, and they needed to be kept in balance without God having to do like miracles on demand.
Yeah. Otherwise, I'd have 100,000 more insects in my yard without that one wasp colony. Who'd have thought that?
Who'd have thunk it? Yeah. And then you went and killed it.
I know it. Yeah. Maybe I need to keep those around.
No, just kill them. We got other
kill
ways.
Kill them all.
Right? God has given us so many ways to deal with the environment that we find ourselves in. So some species have degenerated, as Lita Kosner pointed out in her article, fabulous article, on wasps, that because of the fall, there has been degeneration. So there's two things going on. One is that there are functions that we don't understand their original good purpose. And two, things are breaking down.
That's right. Two things.
So things are bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So things are getting a little bit worse each generation. Mm-hmm. And then you have the fall where we won't know until we meet Jesus and we can, you know, maybe sit in the classroom and he'll show us on a chalkboard, you know, how this works.
So, Fred, all that really was in preparation to get to the editorial by Dr. Jonathan Sarfati, which in our next program, we'll go through that editorial. Dr. Sarfati is brilliant. You and I have bragged about him many times.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he plays chess blindfold with, eight people simultaneously at a creation conference. He's blindfolded in the middle, and he's going around this circle of tables, and he's playing all these guys, and he's remembering the positions of all the boards and making all the moves and beating all the players.
Yeah. Well, he tied one guy. So that guy got the honor to play him straight up and got thrashed, of course.
Oh, yeah, right. Because Jonathan was the chess master of New Zealand.
Yeah, the chess champion from there.
Yeah, from the country.
Yep.
And so he's brilliant, and his editorial called Causeless Capitulation on Creation. We'll get to that in our next Real Science Radio show, and I can't wait.
Sounds great, Bob. Thanks for another great show.
All right. Thank you, Fred Williams and Bob Enyart for Real Science Radio. If you'd like to support the program, please go to our website, rsr.org, and there's two ways. One, shop in the science department. Just click on the store, then browse the science department, and for Christmas, in fact, you can get fabulous DVDs, Blu-rays, and books on creation, evolution, the global flood. But then also you could subscribe to our monthly Bible studies, our monthly topical videos, or make a automatic monthly contribution to help keep Fred and I on the air, reaching more and more people. We don't have a mega church behind us. We don't have a foundation. It's me, Fred, you, and the Lord. So we really need your help. So if you enjoy this program, please help us reach more people. And until next week, this is Bob Enyart and Fred Williams for Real Science Radio. May God bless you. Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.